Yesterday's Concert is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.
And so I really did. I enjoyed what I was doing at the time. And for me, live shows is everything. It's the payoff. It's the reason I write. It's the reason I do this is all for the live show. And so when COVID hit and all that stopped and all I had left was sitting with this music that I'd created, it was just this like dark and sad internal time for me of loss of identity. I didn't know who I was. I was listening to the music and they were great songs. I wrote them with incredible people, but I just didn't feel like I had my heart and soul in them as much. It was a really tough time. And so with this new direction, it was very much so a recommitment to myself and my identity and really just saying, screw everything else and everyone else. Let me just make what I want to make and the art that I want to create. And so, yeah.
Welcome to Yesterday's Concert, a podcast that celebrates live music. My name is Lance Ingram, and in this episode we talk to upcoming superstar, Gunner. He shares the candid story of how his new album, Best Mistake, saved him from nearly quitting his passion for writing music and performing live. Grab your earplugs for rock's next big thing. I am here with Gunner, and we're going to talk about his incredible new album, Best Mistake, that's coming out later this week. I've been fortunate enough to get to hear it already, and I can tell you it's going to blow people away. This is a star in the making. Gunner, I'm so pumped to have you here today, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. What an intro. This is the first time I've heard the album name from someone else's mouth, so it's cool, man. Oh. I'm excited to be here and talk about it. Man, it means a lot. I mean, we chatted a little bit before we started this thing, and you said how many concerts you've been to, how many shows you've seen, how much music you've probably heard. So the fact that you say that, that really means a lot.
Oh man, well, the honor is all mine, man. To get to hear your stuff early was a real treat. So, before we get into the conversation about the album, let's do a couple icebreakers just to have a little fun and get to know each other.
Bring it.
So you started playing guitar at 7. Mm. What's your advice for young kids that are just getting started on the instrument?
Oh, that's such a good question. I would say my advice would literally just be play as much as you can. Like, I got in this weird place of where I learned how to solo and play like certain scales, and then I was just kind of stuck there and I didn't know how to get outside of this like box that I was in. And what it came down to was just like picking up hearing songs and hearing like guitar solos that you like and be like, I'm just going to learn that. And you just YouTube like how to play, you know, this solo from this song and learn it. And then you start to realize like the connections between different boxes in your hands and you kind of can put things together and realize you can play things different ways. So yeah, it's just about finding the love in learning other people's stuff and then taking that and making it your own.
So finding the love in other people's stuff, what's a concert that you saw that really transcended for you into your passion for performing live?
Okay. Back in the day, a concert that like really blew me away is this artist named Corey Harper, believe it or not. He's actually a buddy of mine now, which is really cool. But he played this acoustic set here in LA, and man, it blew me away to see the connection and the feelings and emotions in a room because of just one man and a guitar. It was so cool. And that was really the moment. I'd been making music and into music, but when I saw that show, it really was like, that was when I was like, I really need to commit my life to doing this, because that was fucking incredible.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. That's so cool. So I know, next question, I know you're a big 90s alternative rock fan. So who do you feel is an underrated band or artist from that decade?
Underrated is tough, because anyone I say is going to sound like I don't even know if any of them are underrated.
How about this? I'll tell you who I think is underrated, and everybody can golf and make fun of me.
Okay.
I think Soundgarden is incredibly underrated in the grand scale of things. Yeah. I think they don't get anywhere near the justice they deserve compared to Pearl Jam or Nirvana. I think they are the most one of the most underrated bands of the decade.
I wouldn't have said that they were underrated, so that makes perfect sense. I agree with what you said. I don't know, man. I'm scrolling through some of my songs right now to see like what is.
Well, do you want to throw some shade and say who's overrated then? Would that be better? Would that be easier?
Overrated. I'm not a huge Scorpions fan.
Okay.
I'm not a huge I mean, I'm not a huge like super punk metal, like just I like kind of more classic rock stuff. So like I respect and I love and I understand like the Rage Against the Machine and you know, but not necessarily my kind of music. That's what I'll say.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Hey, it's your opinion, man. You're fully entitled to it. That's all that matters. Okay, so last question, and we'll jump into the conversation. We've got a time machine. I've built a time machine. I don't know if you know this or not, but you get to go back to another decade where you're just a music icon. What decade are you choosing?
I'm choosing the 80s for sure.
Okay, you want to go for the decadence then?
Yeah, because I think late 80s, early 90s, maybe, I think it would have been a perfect time for. Like I really like what Nine Inch Nails did actually in the way of like taking what was being done but adding a new element. Like when production started to kind of take its next steps and these sounds and these like 808 and these crazy sounds that were added that no one had ever heard. That to me is like what I'm almost trying to do today in a weird way is like taking what people know at its core of like really good classic timeless rock and try to put modern and fresh elements on it and make it sound like a record that's, you know, from tomorrow. So I don't know. I think that little window would be a good time of coming into that.
You saying that, like, that hits on like three or four things that I want to talk about with your album that I picked up on.
Oh, fuck.
So I think to go, like, again, I really want to reiterate, it's a really great album. I really thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm pumped for the world to get to hear it because I know I've seen your like social media, people are clamoring for it, they're really excited about it. So I just want to go ahead and put it out there that they're going to love it. But your new album is a pretty sharp directional change from your previous work.
Oh yeah.
So are you abandoning the previous style, or what brought about
Oh
the
yeah.
change?
No, the previous style is in the past for me. I think what it comes down to is growing up. You know, I originally kind of signed a deal when I was 16, and it was, you know, I was thrown into what everyone wanted and thought that I wanted to be. You know, when you're young and you're in it, you just kind of that's what you're doing. I didn't have enough of a of like a self identity to say I don't like this, you know, and so I really did. I enjoyed what I was doing at the time, and for me, live shows is everything. It's like it's the payoff. It's the reason I write. It's the reason I do this is all for the live show. And so when COVID hit and all that stopped, and all I had left was sitting with this music that I had created, it was just this like really like dark and sad internal time for me of like loss of identity. I didn't know who I was. I was listening to the music and they were great songs. I wrote them with incredible people, but I just didn't feel like I had my heart and soul in them as much. And it was really tough, man. I like it was a really tough time. And so with this new direction, it was very much so a recommitment to myself and my identity and really just saying screw everything else and everyone else. Let me just make what I want to make and the art that I want to create. And so, yeah, with that being said, the album that's coming is kind of that first project of me just doing what I want to do and committing to who I am. And so, yeah, everything in the past is, you know, it holds value. I remember it. I love it for what it was. But yes, anyone listening, I would very highly encourage to listen to the new stuff and wait for the next project.
Well, so I mean, do you feel that you are being inauthentic with the old stuff, or is it just more you're coming out of your teens and into your 20s and you're just kind of, it's a big life change, really and truly. Is that more the root of it?
Yes, it's not that it was inauthentic, because never was I doing it and feeling like it wasn't right. It's just, you know, yeah, you grow up and then you look at things you did when you're, you know, younger and you're like, why did I do that? It's more so in the sense of like, yeah, I just grew up and really discovered myself as a human being. And with that obviously comes music and culture and other things that I find love and passion for. And when I discovered a lot more of myself and I grew up, I learned that what I'd been doing isn't necessarily what I wanted to continue doing.
So, what were some of those revelations that you had about who you are that really made this dynamic shift?
I just really struggled, man. I really struggled growing up caring too much about what other people think and what other people, you know, what opinions were being had and said. And it was a really tough thing for me to get over and like figure out how do I leave that behind and really create music that is for me. And that's a hard thing, because when you go from writing a song that you know, if it gets released depends on if a majority of the people on your team or your friends, like if the majority of the people like it, then it's going to come out. If not many people like it, it's not. And so, you know, switching to a project and a direction and almost like a self-confidence in what I'm doing to where it, no opinion matters. You know, if I played it for 100 people and 99 didn't like it, but I did, and I thought it was one that needed to be out in the world, then it would be out in the world. And that's just a hard transition. And so with that, like I felt myself kind of grow up a lot, mature a lot, you know, in not a tacky way. I like really feel like I became, you know, from a boy to a man in a really cool way.
I mean, how much of that do you think was the pandemic? Because I mean, that's when a lot of this happened for you. Do you think it was you were getting off the stage, out away from people and into isolation? Do you think that was kind of the root cause of it?
Honestly, man, not really. Like COVID, it really didn't, it wasn't till the end of COVID when this really all, it was like just over a year ago, a year and a half ago now, where like this all happened. Because during COVID, it was just like, no one knew what was happening. Obviously, I was like, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't, it was supposed to last, what, 2 weeks, then 2 months, then a couple. Yeah. So it was after the, at least the full first year of COVID where I was like, all right, this is crazy. I thought live shows would be back by now. They're not. Now I'm listening to the music. And there was like, I mean, really honestly, there was like a 4 to 6 month period in 2020 where I was like, I almost quit. I was like, I don't know what I want to do anymore. So yeah, I mean, COVID definitely was a really big kickstarter into why this whole transition happened. But it wasn't until like COVID was kind of ending where I really kind of refound the passion for what I was doing and what I wanted to do.
What was it about listening to music and being away from it that made you want to quit? What was so rough about that period?
Just, you know, we obviously had plans, my team and I, and, you know, at the time, the people I was signed with, there were plans of when I, you know, what the next 2 years were going to look like, right? And mm-hmm. when that amount of time goes by and things don't happen, right? And you know, that's just, that's kind of the name of the game is things never go as expected. And so when that happens, what do you have to fall back on? You know, you have artistry, you have talent, you have all these things that really keep you sane when everything else is trying to pull you off the tracks. When I didn't have that artistry and that identity to back it up, I fell flat. I just felt completely empty with what I had created. It was tough. It was a really dark time.
That's really heartbreaking to imagine, to be an artist and look at your body of work and say, I don't identify with that anymore. That had to be pretty rough, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, I love those songs for what they, you know, when I made them, I loved them. They still hold so much value today, right? Like it's the past mm-hmm. and it's a part of my identity for sure. But, and not saying like the songs were bad. They're great songs.
Yeah, yeah.
It just was, you know, what I wanted to say and put into the world had changed.
What brought you out of that kind of funk? What was the kind of savior that reignited this love for music and everything for you?
It was a random meeting. One of my buddies who now kind of co-manages me was, you know, his company had moved into this new office and they had a golf simulator in their office. And so it was, you know, I had nothing going on during my days. I was like begging for things to do. And so he was like, oh, come check out our new office. You know, we'll play a little golf on the golf simulator. I was like, great. I went over to the office and the head of their company, this guy, Neil Jacobson, who ran Interscope for a while, he just ended up wanting to sit down and talk and I played him some music and it was just, you know, it was the same thing. It was like, this is great music, man. This is great, but mm-hmm. I can feel it and I can see it. You know, tell me, why don't you play me something that excites you? So I played him this song that I wrote in Nashville like a couple years back. And I think he could tell when I played that I lit up in a different way. And so he kind of just, it's crazy because as hard of a time as it was, this was all that it took for me to kind of take the next step was him saying, don't go work with the best producer and the biggest writer. It's like, go work with your friends and go make something that you want to make and show me. That was it. And so I went that day, called one of my buddies up, this guy, Ryan DeLude. And we went into the studio and I just, for the first time in my life, man, it wasn't about Spotify or radio or what are people going to like or react to. It was like, I just want to write something that I enjoy and that I really connect with and that comes from me. And so we wrote a song called Keep You Around. It was the first song we wrote. It's on the album. And that was the, I mean, that was really it. That the feeling I got after that day changed the course of, you know, probably the rest of my life.
So did you have a lot of the songs for Best Mistake already written, or did they come after this? What, how did that come about?
That was the first session. Literally, I went from that meeting from me being encouraged to just go write what I want to write. And I went and I wrote that song and came back the next day, played it for my buddy and Neil. And you know, we all just were like pretty excited and pretty, I don't know, I think it was unexpected that it, that from hearing the old stuff to like hearing what the first song of from me would really sound like. I think it was an exciting kind of surprise. And so I ended up just writing as much as I ever have, as much as I could. I got in with just all my friends and all people that I love to work with and just hang out with. And we wrote probably like 40 songs over a couple of months, maybe 2 or 3 months. We wrote 40 songs. And I was really like, during that time was when I really was discovering this identity and who I was, because I was getting to express myself and create stuff that was coming from inside of my heart and my soul and my head. And like, with that, my identity, you know, and I could look in the mirror and know who I was for the first time. That really started to come out. And so after a couple of months, we had this collection of music and didn't really know what to do with it and what the plan was. And we didn't know what direction anything was even going to be, you know, like it just was, I was just writing what I wanted to write. And so, yeah, we had about 40 demos and, you know, I sat down with my internal team and we really just talked about it all. And I picked our my favorite songs, my favorite 10 songs, and ended up really, really luckily connecting with Brendan O'Brien, who is a legendary rock producer. You know, it was supposed to just be a meeting where I just, you know, I just wanted to meet him and play him some demos and see what he thought about maybe the next steps and what I should do. And yeah, I think he really connected with the music and connected with me, and him and I kind of built a really good relationship, and he wanted to come in and produce the album with me. So I was really honored and thankful, and we created this, you know, collection of music that I'm really excited about.
Let's, I mean, I didn't want to talk about Brendan too much, but like, I really do want to come in. Like, the production value on your album is spectacular. Like, there's so much intricacy and engineering behind all of the songs that just really elevate what you've already written. And so, I mean, I did want to like make note of like how much of that was like conscious. Did you work with him on that, or was that all him?
Oh yeah. No, it was a very, very much so a tedious, time consuming, you know, him and I, we had another producer, Adam Friedman, who Brendan, you know, knew really well, who's a great young producer. He came in and it was really just a really special thing. We cut the record, obviously, with just guitars and, you know, live drums that were just fillers. We made sure we got the vocals and the actual attitude of the performance as good as we could have gotten it, which we really accomplished. Brendan is amazing at what he does, and him and I really compliment each other in that regard. And then it was time for just layering guitars and bass and figuring out cool synth sounds and whatnot. And that's where you really see Brendan do what he does. You know, his ability to create moments, whether it's with a guitar or a melodic change, like, he's just so incredible. He's done it for so long with so many, you know, idols of mine, that it was just really cool, man. And you know, he's such a young soul and I'm a little bit more of an old soul. And we kind of had this really sweet connection. And once the tracks were done and all the, you know, the instruments were laid down, we brought in, like I said, this guy, Adam Friedman, and him and I and Brendan really took the classic rock thing that Brendan and I had created and helped it make that transition into kind of a record from tomorrow, like I was saying. And so, you know, that's where we add, you'll hear like vocal processing here and there and delay throws, and the drums really, really came to life with Adam. And a lot of the intricate stuff you're talking about is really a mix between Brendan, Adam, and I.
I want to go back to the rock sound in a minute, but there's another thing I want to touch on before we get too far ahead. So you said you wrote more than 40 songs. There's only 10 songs on the album. What's going to happen to those other 30 songs, as well as how did you pare it down to just those 10? That's pretty impressive.
Man, it's the hardest thing to do Ever. It's the worst because you have such a connection. And that's what I like. Now, for the first time, I have this crazy, they're like, each one is my child. So it's like,
Yeah.
how do you pick, you know, out of 40 songs? That is around 40. I don't know, maybe more, maybe a little less, but how do you pick down to 10 songs? And so it was, you know, it was a group effort of like, I picked my favorite 20. And, you know, everyone, like my internal team, everyone picked their favorite 20. And then when it got down to like 12, 13, 14 songs, it's just, it really is, it's so hard. You have to really, like, when you get down to that, maybe this album was supposed to be 12 songs. There's a couple songs that I'm going to put on the next project that's where some songs will go. But it really comes down to like wanting to get a little bit of everything, right? So, you know, I want a song that hits this almost a little bit more country rock. I want to hit a song that is really just in your face, powerful, and has attitude. We want to hit the more acoustic, the more, you know, I want the feeling and the emotions to come through on this song. It's a tough process, but some songs will make the next project. Most of them will never see the light of day. It's just kind of the name of the game.
So why some of those won't see the light of day? Just not up to par or just not finished? What do you think?
You know, but a lot of them are great songs, and you always, you know, I'm always wanting to bring them into the mix on the next project, but you know, you never know. I have no idea what the next project's gonna sound like or be yet. You know, maybe it's gonna be the next step of this album, and certain songs from the last one will completely fit, and the songwriting will be great, and we're just gonna produce it, and maybe it'll fit. Maybe the new direction's a little bit more. Maybe it's a little bit more rock. Maybe it's a little more this. Maybe it's a little more that, and that it won't fit. So it all depends. I mean, there's this thing in songwriting that's like the curse of songwriting, which is that every new song is always kind of the favorite. So it's hard to like have these ones and then write new ones and want to replace the new ones with the old ones. It's funny.
Well, and it's always funny to hear like Neil Young or Paul McCartney say like their 2022 album's the best thing they've ever done. It's like, dude, you were in the Beatles. That's absolutely false. Like, come on, man. Let's be real about that. Well, so I mean, really and truly, what you're saying though is these are going to be saved in the vault until you're Garth Brooks level, and they're going to come out on your box set in 20 years, and the people are going to awe and ooh over these songs. That's what I'm hearing.
That might be part of the plan.
I love it. Well, so okay, so I want to talk about the rock sound that you've added that you have on this album. So it is a very anthemic sound. It's a very stadium rock sound. And I want to get your thoughts. People say rock is dead. I just heard a great rock album by you. What are your thoughts?
Thank you, man. I think by no means is rock dead. I think that what COVID did more than anything was excite people to want to see live music again. I think that really, you don't know what you got until it's gone. And so when COVID hit and everyone wasn't going to concerts and wasn't seeing live music the way that they'd been seeing it, everyone just was craving live music. And I think what happened coming out of COVID was you saw a lot of artists kind of lean into the punk thing, right? And get that live sound with a little bit more punk, kind of darker rock, you know, like just drums going fucking crazy and you know, dark guitars, and it felt live, and so people really like it. And what I wanted to do with this music was just kind of take the next step of that. It's like the classic rock side of it, the side of that's the Rolling Stones side, where it's just people want to come see a great, great show, great music that they can play any time of the day. So by no means do I think rock is dead. I think that we're in a world now where genres are so weird, and there's no, like, you can't say that one thing's rock and one thing's not. Like, you go through a rock playlist on whatever, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever, Pandora, there's a lot of people who would say, that's not rock, that's not rock, that's not rock. But it's hard to put anything in like genre boxes anymore. I just know that live music is everything to me, and I think a lot of people feel that way when seeing shows. And man, if a live show is good and the music's good, that's all that matters to me.
I definitely pick up on what you're saying. Like when I was listening to the album, it's like this sounds like what I heard in high school, which was in the early 2000s. Like it sounded like it would have fit exactly alongside the songs I heard on the radio then. But yeah, I do pick up like that. I don't say this like Machine Gun Kelly. Like I kind of pick up that lineage of evolution in the songs, not comparing you to him, but just how he evolved the pop punk sound to what you're doing. And I kind of see that forward thinking and what you're talking about. So, I mean, how much of that was present in your mind when you were writing these songs? Was it something that was like you were thinking about? It was conscious, or it was just kind of naturally flowing out of how you write songs?
I think it came a lot from like inspiration and what I was listening to, like going into writing the album. I was in just a huge hole of classic, timeless, just great rock. You know, there was a lack of that from what I was hearing across, you know, modern music. And, you know, I get it. I understand that sometimes listening to older records for people is harder, right? Like they sound, there's a difference in clarity and, you know, sounds and drums and whatnot back then to now. And so what I kind of wanted to do was write songs that were like that, timeless songs. I mean, timeless songs that they have that, I mean, I keep using the Rolling Stones as an example because I'm a huge Mick Jagger fan, but like the music at its bones is timeless. And so how do I try to write timeless rock songs like that, but put a fresh modern kind of production element on it? And that was kind of the thought throughout the process, but that kind of came in more so when the songs were already written.
I realize I'm kind of asking the same question twice again, but you know, again, I heard the stadium rock sound to a lot of these songs. And when I was listening, it kept making me think like these songs deserve to be played in arenas and bigger venues. Was that intentional, or is it just kind of aspirational? And what are your thoughts about that?
Probably a little bit of both, probably subconsciously intentional. Obviously I want to do this, you know, for as many people and share that moment with as many people as possible. I don't know, man. I guess it was kind of happens like that. You write songs and you know, my goals come out in the writing. And so I guess subconsciously it was probably intentional, but really for me, it's this first project's just about getting on the road and playing it. And I kind of viewed with this new direction that I'm starting my career over in a cool way. And so this first project is really, to me, I would love to play these songs in arenas and stadiums one day. That would be, you know, that's of course the goal, but really these songs were written to be played in clubs and theaters, and just having that face-to-face, really, really special, energetic, powerful, those moments in a smaller venue. That's what excites me really right now more than anything.
Well, so talking about just the refresh on your career, what defines success for this new version of yourself?
What defines success for the new version of myself? Really, it's really shows. It really comes down to shows. Like, you know, before in the pop side of things, it's all about, you know, it's streaming and it's numbers and it's this and it's that. And like, I get it, you know, it makes sense. That's how you, you know, that's how you stay relevant, right? And stay on the playlist and pop, whatever. But for me, success really just comes down to how large of a scale can I share a live show moment with, you know, how many people can I experience that with? And I really, truly believe that we put on a damn good show, and the music is just the catapult to get us to the live show. So if I can start doing shows by myself across the country, across the world, that's success to me.
I want to talk about some of the songs specifically, go into the tracks and get the stories behind them and get some insider knowledge. So I want to start with the leadoff single, Cinnamon. Mm-hmm. Has a ton of radio potential, in my opinion. It just sounds like perfect for the radio. Can you tell me, I mean, it's obviously about the muse of every great song out there. So can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Yeah. So Cinnamon was actually one of the last songs I wrote. I was missing a 6/8. So we wrote a waltz, and I don't know. I really have a lot of love and I grew up just loving and listening and playing and soloing over blues. You know, I've got a big love for Muddy Waters and like, just, there's just like, there's something about Cinnamon that feels very bluesy and sultry and just like, it just feels hot. And when we were playing that song and playing those chords and just figuring, like, it wanted to be something that was like just cool and sexy. And you know, that song came about really, really easy. It was just about basically being addicted to somebody who plays with your emotions and kind of drags you around, but you don't care because they're Cinnamon, right? So song's special, man. That song definitely was one of my favorites from the album. I wanted to put that song out first because, you know, I hadn't released music in a year, 2 years, but with this transition happening on, you know, it was clear on, at least on socials, that it transition had happened. And so I wanted to put a song out that was a little bit more of a statement, you know. At the same time, it is radio friendly, right? It feels like a song that could do well, which is awesome. And it kind of helps blend the fan base I had with what I'm doing now. But yeah, that song's special, man. That song just feels correct.
I noticed on your YouTube, you have a live version of the song and it has like an 8-minute long solo. It's just crazy long, incredible guitar solo. Did you withhold guitar solos from the album and just you're saving them for the live show? There's not as much guitar solo on the studio version as there is the live version.
It's funny you say that because every song used to have a guitar solo in every fucking one of them, I swear. And everyone was just, it came down to like, hey, I love it, but we can't put a guitar solo in every instead of a song. So yeah, we ended up cutting a lot of guitar solos. A lot of them are still there. They're just shorter. Like Cinnamon has a really wicked guitar solo. They Didn't Tell Me has one. The Chase has one. There's solos in there. But I think what's really cool is, like I said, like that album is just a catapult and to be a vehicle to the live show. And, you know, when you get to the live show and I say I'm going to play Cinnamon and people have this idea of how Cinnamon sounds and then it breaks down to an 8-minute guitar solo and it creates a moment that people remember and that feels different than what they could just go listen to. That's what it's about. I love that. I would rather someone want to come see a show to get that than, you know, than have it on the record and be fulfilled, you know, not need to come see it live.
Well, so the next song I want to talk about, this is actually my favorite track on the album. It's Blame It on the Rain.
Wow.
I think this is the coolest one in my opinion. It has that early 2000s power ballad to it. Really dig it. So tell me about that one.
Blame It on the Rain is an emotional song for me. That one came from a really personal place. Special song, man. Really special song. I think that the story of it really comes down to growing up with somebody who, you know, was a really, really close friend of mine, where you just kind of think you've got life kind of figured out and you kind of both have the same head on your shoulders. You both have this plan. And I ended up kind of sticking to mine and I lost a friend down making decisions and doing things that kind of we had planned to avoid. And instead of wanting to admit that and really kind of own that was what was happening, I wanted to blame it on the rain. I wanted to blame it on a shitty day, you know, think that tomorrow could be different, tomorrow could be better. And yeah, it just felt like every time that I'd look over at his path, we were just getting farther and farther apart. And so, yeah, I wrote that song about that. Just a special, real, real soulful from the heart song that I'm glad you connect with.
I mean, have you played it live yet?
Oh, yeah.
So when you play it live, do all those emotions kind of spur back up in you?
Yeah, for sure. What do we do like 6 or 7? I think we did 6 shows in LA just to kind of get our show figured out before we get out there. And yeah, there were definitely a couple of the nights I broke down definitely in that song.
And it's a fantastic song. I'm glad you put it out there and shared it with the world, dude. It's a good one. So you've got another single coming out before the album. Can you tell me about that one?
Yes, this is a really cool, fun song. Fuck a Broken Heart. This is about basically, I mean, kind of what it sounds like. The song's about having somebody in your life that you kind of have a connection with that has had a relationship with somebody else. And you guys have kind of been in my head waiting for the right time. And, you know, their thing ends for whatever reason. And instead of me wanting her to be sad about it, I was like, fuck a broken heart. Like, we finally can be together kind of thing. And yeah, that song's got power, got angst. It's fun. That one's fun live too.
Is it the same muse as Cinnamon? Is it or a different muse?
Same muse from Cinnamon on that one.
Man, I hope this individual got a credit in the lyrics or something from you, man.
Doing just fine.
Since we got a little bit of time, I want to ask about one more song. Tell me about The Chase. Great riff. Love that one.
The Chase is an interesting song for me because it is very single-ish. Like everyone loves that song. To me, I love it. It as a single, it didn't really scream what I wanted my self to be seen and heard as a single. The Chase was fucking cool. The Chase we wrote and Brendan really brought that one to life. That bridge guitar solo moment is one of the coolest riffs I've heard in a while. It's just so cool, and it comes out of nowhere, and it, like, I was really excited when that kind of came to life, because that song was missing that. It's a really good song. I wrote that song specifically for almost like a festival. I had a festival in mind, and I think, like, when you look at the BPMs of the song and the chorus, like, that one was made for people to be out of the chase, it just, like, has that the correct tempo for people to be kind of nodding their heads and jump in and enjoying a festival for. And so I hope I get to play a festival this summer and play that at it, because that was kind of, that's why I wrote that song.
You talked about it earlier, but how has your live show changed with these songs and with this new change in yourself? How is it different?
Oh my God. I feel like a different person up there. I feel like for the first time, really, the live show is an expressive opportunity for me. As before, right, the songs guided the show. Now it's the opposite, where the show is just free. The music allows it to be. And what I really am trying to do moving forward with concerts and each show is give every night something special that the night before didn't get to have and that the next one doesn't. So that you create an environment where people don't want to miss out and people always want to come see the show when it's in town. And the music really curates that ability for me and the band. And it's really cool. Like, the new show is free. It is expressive, and it just has more attitude than anything else I've ever done. And I love it. I mean, I lose my voice half the nights. My fingers are bleeding half the nights. Like, it's just, and I don't care, you know, I just get to be expressive and I get to share that moment with everybody in there. And that is something that I love and that I've never had before with the old stuff.
So when you play these shows, do you look back at that period, that dark period, and say, thank God I didn't quit? Like, it was so worth it going through that to be where I'm at now.
Of course. And I'm a big fan of Kobe Bryant and quotes. And with every great success is a huge struggle. And that was one of the big things that he said. And, you know, I hadn't had that in my career and in my life before. And, like, because the other stuff didn't work out and it put me in this place of just, like, really dark kind of self-sabotage, just a really dark place, that is what I got to overcome to kind of find the success that I'm at now. And it's not, again, what does success mean? It's not that I'm streaming 10 million streams and that I'm playing, you know, arenas, but I'm doing what I love and what I want to do for the first time. And I had to get through a lot of mud to get there. And yeah, like, I'm so thankful for that time, because I don't know if I would know who I was without it.
Last question. What's on deck besides the new album this year? You got Best Mistake coming out February 24th. Mm-hmm. You're talking about doing some touring. What's coming up, man?
It's about shows. The album is coming out, and it is about doing as many damn shows as I can do. I'm doing a small little tour in February, which will be, you know, just us basically getting out there in small rooms to really just get our show dialed. We're looking at a big support role tour in the spring, and then I can't quite say it yet, but a pretty huge life-changing opportunity tour for me in the summertime going to Europe. So I'm just about shows, man. And then I want to come back. I want to do festivals, and I'd like to put an album out either at the end of this year or, you know, maybe same time next year. But shows, it's all about the shows.
Dude, you're going to be busy, man. You're going to have a busy year. It's awesome.
Busy gunner is a happy gunner, though.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate you talking today. Seriously, great album. Way to go. I'm a fan of it. Good job, dude. Thanks for making a great album.
I appreciate that. I really do.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Yesterday's Concert. Thoughts? Similar experiences? Disagree? Let us know on Twitter, Instagram, and even TikTok. Or you can email us at info@yesterdaysconcert.com. If you're feeling kind, give us a review on Apple Podcast. Otherwise, until next time, give us a subscribe, check out our website, yesterdaysconcert.com, and most importantly, take care of your shoes.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.